Last Sunday at the Super Bowl, Jennifer Hudson, whose sister and nephew were killed by gun violence, and third and fourth graders who survived the shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary School, moved us to tears as they sang America the Beautiful. Now, we know that the children looked well, but they may not be. They are not part of a subgenre of survivors of violence, students who've survived trauma at school. You can probably include the children who were on that school bus in Alabama attacked by a gunman, students in New Orleans who watched people die during Katrina. Teachers say they watched as high schoolers there started sucking their thumbs after Hurricane Katrina. Music therapy was brought in for teachers at a school in Finland after a mass shooting there 6 years ago. And at Columbine High School in Colorado, balloons were banned for years after that 1999 shooting because the sound of them popping would send kids diving under their desks. Carolyn Mears is the mother of a student who was trapped for hours inside Columbine High School during that shooting. She went on to write her dissertation on trauma and has compiled hundreds of hours of interviews with school trauma survivors in a book called Reclaiming School in the Aftermath of Trauma, Advice Based on Experience. We want to spend a few minutes with her today, and she joins us from KGNU in Denver, Colorado. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
You know, there's so much here. I mean, we're reminded that the school had to have volunteers to read 20,000 letters a day that came from people around the world, that the publishers of Chicken Soup for the Soul sent a million copies to the school. I mean, all these little details only people from there could know. But the overarching thing I'm taking away from this is that the people in Newtown, they have a long way to go. This is still present for you.
Yes, it is. It's a permanent memory, and it doesn't go away. It doesn't begin and end on the day of the shooting or the day of the tornado or the day of the terrorist attack.
You say on a day when the breeze is just right, the sky the same shade of blue, and there's a helicopter?
Yeah.
It can all come back.
The air, the breeze, the sky, all of those things. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that physical experience does stay with you. And it doesn't mean that you go back to that place of sorrow and fear and anxiety, but it's a significant memory that you do carry with you as part of your life story.
You know, one of the things in the aftermath of Columbine, and again, this is relatable to what people are going through now, is you sort of have to sift through, and the school had to sort of sift through how to approach the different levels of experience that people had. There were people who survived the horror of the library. There were people who saw nothing but were still traumatized. There were teachers, you have the story of a teacher who herded 31 students into a greenhouse, and she sits there for hours with these 31 pairs of eyes staring at her.
Yes. The problem with when an event like this happens in schools is that the kids go back and the teachers go back to a crime scene. And knowing how to teach someone who has survived trauma is not intuitive. You've got kids in there with special needs.
These are the kids who have been through trauma or special needs at this point. But also,
exactly. But also
the teachers. I mean, you really underscore
exactly. How
much the teachers also had post-traumatic stress. There's one, she got hives, her hair fell out. I never understood what some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress could be.
Yes.
Describe what she fantasized about doing because of how her skin felt.
She describes what it feels like as little tingly, prickly experience in her skin and the hives. And she fantasized about shoving her hands through a plate glass window. And as she said, calling it a day, calling it a life.
And getting the irritating flesh off, right.
Just scraping that flesh off because it just overpowers you. And the sense of what PTSD is as a physical symptom is often we don't think about it.
And meantime, she has to teach.
Exactly. Nothing's normal. And yet that sense of normalcy has to be reclaimed, and you're totally consumed by this hypervigilance and this assault on the senses.
So you have this whole environment traumatized. The parents, the children, the teachers, they have to go back to school. They started to make allowances for the kids. Tell us what we can learn post-Columbine. What sadly, can Newtown learn? I mean, what came out of that experience? What advice do people give, not just from Columbine, but from other schools? There were two attacks in Finland, trauma in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. What did we learn?
What I would say I've heard, expressed, and learned from this is part of it is turning within and finding what you need as a person to restore that sense of balance. You know, finding someone to talk with, if that's what helps you. Taking up jogging, or one of the teachers, I love this, the teacher in New Orleans that said, you know, she was having to deal with this aggression of the students and kids were fighting in the halls and it was so much more difficult. And I said, well, what did you do? She said, I changed the PE requirement. I said, well, okay, what was that? And she said, I required yoga. Mm-hmm. Because it taught them to look within and learn to center themselves. The brain learns from trauma how to survive, and that hypervigilance and all of those tingly sensations that you were speaking of, that's the body saying, okay, I'm on alert, I'm going to help you learn from the previous experience, and accepting that that's normal. It's totally normal to feel this way.
What I think I'm hearing from every single one of these instances is that specialists have to come in right away. But also, you learn things like let people go back in the schools way before they have to actually teach there. Some schools, they, you know, may be raised, but they need to physically reclaim the space. In Finland, teachers were put through group intervention called diffusing so that they could all get together in different groups depending on how close they were to the trauma. The town paid for any extra counseling. Music therapy was given. This sense that there's a lot that has to happen.
There is. And one of the real needs, I think, is to think proactively about it. Because it is something that in the midst of trauma, it is very difficult to plan ahead and to say, okay, we're going to need some resources. Let's go out and find some. And there's going to be people who knock down the door to offer resources and help and support, and that in itself becomes part of, I have to say, it becomes part of the problem, because the local officials, the district, the, you know, the university or whatever it is, they then have to field all of these requests. But we plan for prevention, we plan for survival, not enough, but sometimes. We need to also plan what to do if the absolute unthinkable happens. How can we begin to think in advance so that trial and error isn't played out over such a long period of time and sometimes very devastatingly to a community?
And that's Carolyn Mears. Her son survived the Columbine High School shooting. She wrote her dissertation on trauma and has now edited the book Reclaiming School in the Aftermath of Trauma, Advice Based on Experience. That's advice from people in Finland, New Orleans, Columbine. By the way, earlier I said Jennifer Hudson's sister had also died from gun violence. It was her mother. Equally horrible. But more on all of this in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about surviving school trauma with Carolyn Mears, whose son survived Columbine. Before the break, she was saying that she wished schools were more prepared for the aftermath of trauma, like a deadly weather event or a shooting. That when school officials are themselves traumatized, it's not the time to try to decide what kind of counseling to offer students. But because of the Newtown shooting, schools are focusing more on preparing for traumatic events, and that's also raised questions. Here's a little bit of a story from the Today Show about a recent mock drill in Modesto, California, with NBC's Miguel Amaguer reporting.
The mock massacre simulates what so many now fear. Two gunmen open fire on students, sweeping through a crowded campus, taking lives. This school shooting, just a drill, but the drama is so intense, even scaring the 20 teenage actors.
I felt really terrified. I've never felt that scared.
It was way too real. I didn't know that was how it was going to be.
The training video includes students covered in blood red paint, the injured crying for help, and children as young as 12 locked inside barricaded classrooms.
tough even to hear. A high school outside of Chicago also held a controversial drill last week that used blank bullets, this time in the hallway, so students and teachers could get familiar with the sound of gunfire. A study in School Psychology Review found drills themselves do help students know what to do in a crisis, but the co-author of the study said she's not sure extremely realistic ones are a good idea. Are we traumatizing students and trying to protect them? We already know kids can be traumatized by seeing televised reports about shootings. And another thing we do know, the circles of trauma extend way out from people who are at the actual event. After Caroline Meir's son survived Columbine, she wrote her dissertation on trauma, has edited the book Reclaiming School in the Aftermath of Trauma. And as we said, she's with us now. And Caroline, after Newtown, the Columbine High School principal, Frank DeAngelis, said for people there, it would never get back to normal. It's that overwhelming. 14 years after Columbine, people still feel the effects. So we have to ask, you know, after all these other school shootings, do we have a national response team, a national recovery plan, or an outline for schools to use? Or is it still piecemeal? You know, people from Columbine just decide they want to go to Newtown.
As far as I know, we don't have a national support team. One of the reasons I did the book was because I knew that people here had advice to share, and that got me started thinking. You know, there's national organization of victims assistance and all of this, that, and the other. But as far as I know, there's not an organized place where those of us who have experienced this kind of event can make ourselves known. And it's very, that's the other thing. It's really hard for me to think about calling Newtown and saying, hey, can I help? Because I know what it's like to get thousands and thousands of phone calls. We look at crisis prevention and management, but what about this recovery piece?
Yeah. That's the thing I take away here. We mentioned it at the beginning, but it goes on and on. I mean, you know, parents came back 10 years later saying they wish they'd done some of the things they were advised to do right after the trauma, you know, right after the school attack, because the issues didn't show up till later. They didn't get help then, and they didn't get counseling then, and then 10 years later they wished they had, and they, you know, drug and alcohol and marital problems were showing up. A victims assistance program was available for 3 years, but it when it ended, you write, some people were just beginning to need the help.
Yeah. There's still people today who are just now coming to terms with it, and part of it because they have a child who's entering first grade, or they've had a child who's entering school. I know of several Columbine teachers, quite a few actually, who have said, if I talked with you or anyone else, to make sure that people know that it helps to talk to somebody who's been through it. And they are, a number of them are willing to do that, are eagerly, you know, making themselves available in situations like this because they know from their own experience what it was like. And somehow, for someone who's just starting down this road, to be able to talk to someone who says, I understand, I've been through it, or I've been through something like it, that makes such a difference. I know for me personally, there was a mom who came from Paducah and talked to a group of parents one evening, Columbine parents, and the fact that I'm sitting in the audience looking at this lady and she's able to put words together and make sentences. And it was something that I thought, I will never be able to do that again because I am so stunned. You know, you're in this numbness of the experience, and I thought, I will never be able to complete a sentence, to complete a thought. And here is this woman who went through it in her neighborhood school. So reaching out to the hand that is reaching out to them, I want to say that's one of the things that we found very helpful, the teachers here found helpful, and wanted to make it known that that really does help to connect with people who've been through something very much like it.
How sad. You know, sad that, as it turns out, we have those people, you know. Carolyn Meers, the anthology she edited and partly wrote is called Reclaiming School in the Aftermath of Trauma, Advice Based on Experience. People who went through traumatic events, whether it be Hurricane Katrina or the World Trade Towers in New York or mass school shootings and had to bring their school through on the other side. Carolyn, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much for being interested.
Okay, staying with guns in schools. This news note. Yesterday in Philadelphia, a 7-year-old found a loaded gun in his backpack. The child was in an after-school program at the Universal Samuel Daroff Charter School in West Philadelphia. School officials said he was putting a folder in his bag when he noticed the gun, a .38 caliber pistol loaded with 5 rounds. It had probably been there all day. Police are now interviewing family members and reviewing surveillance tapes to see how it might have gotten there. Last month in Queens, New York, another 7-year-old inadvertently brought a loaded semi-automatic pistol with 10 rounds of ammunition and 14 to spare to his school. His mother borrowed his backpack the night before, put her loaded gun in, and forgot to take it out. The mother went in a panic to the school the next day, eventually telling officials there was a gun somewhere in the halls. She was charged with criminal possession of a weapon and endangering the life of a child. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the latest news here and now.